Welcome to Family Policy Matters, an engaging and informative weekly radio show and podcast produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Hi, this is John Rustin, president of NC Family, and we're grateful to have you with us for this week's program. It's our prayer that you will be informed, encouraged, and inspired by what you hear on Family Policy Matters. Today we bring you part one of a keynote address delivered by former Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran at NC Family's Major Speakers Dinner in Winston-Salem, North Carolina on November 7th, 2019.
When I was serving as fire chief in Shreveport, Louisiana, in the early 2000s, I was going through a series of personal and professional challenges, and I sought God for answers. And it was at that time that God led me to do a word study on the word sufferings in the early 2000s. Sufferings, brothers and sisters, sometimes they come sequentially. And you don't have to be old to go through sufferings. Even youth and children experience sufferings. Sometimes sufferings come sequentially. You have a type of a suffering. You have a period of deliverance and peace. And then lo and behold, here comes another type of suffering. But sometimes sufferings come simultaneously, whereby we are going through two or three or more at the same time. That's what I was experiencing in the early 2000s when God led me to study sufferings in the Bible. And when I searched the scriptures about sufferings, this is what I learned. When we see words in the Old and New Testament like afflictions, trials, tribulation, tests, trouble, persecution, chastisement, temptations, and infirmities, they are all types of sufferings. They all fall under the primary heading of sufferings. So I wanted to look at men and women in the Bible who had experienced sufferings in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Well, two categories emerge. There are self-inflicted sufferings and there are God-allowed suffering. And they're pretty much self-explanatory. The self-inflicted sufferings are the trials, tribulations, afflictions, tests, trouble, persecution, chastisement, temptation, infirmities that we bring on ourselves because of our own bad choices. But sometimes we go through afflictions, trials, tribulations, tests, trouble, persecution, chastisement, temptation, and infirmities, and it has nothing to do with what we've done. But God in his sovereignty has chose to allow us to go through those things. So it's throughout our lives that we experience one type of suffering or another. And it is because of sufferings, this is my personal testimony, that I have spiritually matured and developed as a disciple of Christ. The sufferings in my life have matured me as a disciple of Jesus Christ. And if I can be transparent just for a moment, out of the two categories of self-inflicted and God-allowed sufferings, most of the sufferings that I've experienced in my life fall in the self-inflicted suffering category. Is there anybody in the room besides me with that testimony? I think that's most of us. If we're truth about it, that's what we would say. Sufferings over the years, listen, have a way of stripping off and pruning off promiscuous ways, bad habits, and bad relationships that will keep us from achieving our destiny. And I've had my share of self-inflicted sufferings, but experiencing firsthand that blessed promise that where sin abounds, grace does much more abound. Here's where I'm going with that. When I was terminated in 2015, because of my track record with self-inflicted sufferings, the first thing that came to my mind was, God is punishing me again. God is punishing me again. Or, this crossed my mind, I did something years ago that God chastised me for. He thought about it recently and thought, I didn't give that boy enough. And so I got to give him some more. You know, we think like that. We think like that. And then God quickened and said, listen, this is not self-inflicted suffering. This has nothing to do with you. This is God-allowed sufferings. Here's the shouting part. When you're a child of God, it doesn't matter whether your sufferings are self-inflicted sufferings or God-allowed sufferings. All of our sufferings are under the sovereign supervision of God, and he's going to eventually work them together for our good, for his glory. Can I get an amen to that? So God said to me, this is God allowed, not self-inflicted. And you're in pretty good company, Kelvin. You're in pretty good company. And so he reminded me of people's lives that I looked at back then. Job is a good example of how God works in the life of a son of God that experiences God-allowed suffering. Esther is a good example of how God works in a daughter of God who's experiencing God-allowed suffering. And God showed me that I have a history in my word on how I deal with the lives of my sons and daughters in God-allowed sufferings. I am God. I don't change at all. The God I was for Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel as government employees, I'm the same God, and what I did in their life, I'm going to do it in your life as well. And so God revealed to me that there's five things that his sons and daughters need to know when their day comes, not if your day is going to come, when your day is going to come. Here are those five things God taught me to teach to you or share with you. Number one, God always prepares his sons and daughters for suffering. See, always prepares us for sufferings. Whenever we experience suffering, we should come to this conclusion. God, in his own sovereignty, felt that I was prepared to go through what I'm going through. He always prepares us. Number two is the toughest of the five lessons. There are worldly consequences for standing on biblical truth and standing for Christ. There are worldly consequences for standing on biblical truth and standing for Christ. Can I give you a few examples for our brothers and sisters in foreign countries? About 5 years ago, 21 Christian men in Egypt were captured by ISIS. ISIS told these 21 Christian brothers, "You're all going to die. The only way you get to live is to reject your faith in Jesus Christ." All 21 refused to reject their faith in Jesus Christ, and their heads were cut off. In that same era, in Afghanistan, in villages where Christian families were known to live, the Taliban would search the neighborhood to find Christian families. They'd mark their doors with this symbol. Sooner or later, someone would come back to the house. They'd pull the family in a room and speak directly to the dad. Guys, they would speak directly to the dad and tell them, "Your children are going to die. The only way your children get to live is for you to reject your faith in Jesus Christ." There's not a single case on record where one of those Christian dads in Afghanistan rejected Jesus Christ. Guess what happened? Their precious children were killed on the spot. A little while after that, in northern Kenya, on a college campus where Christian and Muslim students were known to attend, a radical group of Islamists stormed the college campus, separated the Muslim students from the Christian students, told the Christian students, "You're all going to die. The only way you get to live is to reject Jesus Christ." 125 college kids refused to reject their faith in Jesus Christ. And they were gunned down on the spot because there are worldly consequences for standing on biblical truth and standing for Christ. In the United States of America, we're not close to facing those kinds of consequences unless, as the body of Christ in the United States of America, we continue the trend of staying divided, passive, and silent. If we continue the trend of staying divided, passive, and silent, our grandchildren or great-grandchildren could one day live in America where if they have the courage to live out their faith, they could lose their precious life if we don't do something in our generation. And then here's the other sad part. I believe that we're not facing those kinds of consequences because God, by his grace, knows we're not prepared for those kinds of tests. Why would you say that, Brother Kelvin? Because we reject Jesus Christ for far less. We have elected officials who run saying, "I'm a Christian." But when they get in the office, they get addicted to the popularity, to all the things surrounding it. And when it comes to legislation that stands on biblical values and biblical truth, they don't stand because not that they don't want to lose their head or their kids. They don't want to lose an election. We have pastors in the United States of America who will not preach biblical truth because they're afraid that there are some influential members in their congregation that could cause them to lose their church, not their head or their kids, their church. We have college kids in the United States of America who won't stand on biblical truth in social relationships because they're afraid, not that they're going to be killed, but they're going to lose a boyfriend or a girlfriend or be unfriended if they stand for Jesus Christ. God knows we're not prepared for the test that in those examples that I just gave. I asked God, I said, God, I don't know if I could have done that. Yeah, I lost my job, but I still have my head. I still have my children. I don't know if I could have done what they did. How were they able to do that? And it was so simple. I had been hearing it all my life. God spoke to me and said, you know the answer. He said, they really believe that to live is Christ and to die is gain. They really believe that. And what that means, brothers and sisters, they really believe that no matter how big the American dream is for you, there is nothing grander than sleeping in the bosom of Jesus. And if they get to go early, all the better. That's why they're able to do what they're able to do. Told you the toughest of the five is number two. There are worldly consequences for standing on biblical truth and standing for Christ. It gets better. It gets better with number three. Number three, there are kingdom consequences for standing on biblical truth and standing for Christ. And the kingdom consequences are always, always, always greater than the worldly consequences. They always are. Jesus said it this way, whatever you lose standing for me, I will restore it 100-fold in this life with persecution. And after you die, you're going to get to go to heaven. Jesus was not exaggerating. Jesus was not using hyperbole. Jesus meant that if you lose a house standing for me, I'll give you a better house 100 times better than the house that you lost. If you lose a boyfriend or a girlfriend standing for me, I'll give you a boyfriend or a girlfriend better than the boyfriend or girlfriend that you lost. Some guys who are Christian guys and some girls who are Christian girls are hanging on to the boogeyman when God has in mind for them Superman. Because they're just hanging on to someone who doesn't believe in the values that we embrace. Listen, God used many in his word to show that whenever you lose something, standing on him, he'll restore it 100-fold. Number four, sufferings are always for the greater glory of God. Sufferings are always for the greater glory of God. I got to give you a quick example. Remember Nebuchadnezzar when he put Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace? He was so incensed about their confidence and faith in God. He says, I'm going to make sure these three boys die. Heated up 7 times hotter. And so he anxiously looked in the furnace to see them burn alive. And then he had to clear his eyes. He said, wait a minute. We put 3 in there. I see 4, and the 4th one looks like the Son of God. Listen, what am I trying to say? When we have the courage and faith to stand, our enemies get to see a side of God that they would have never seen if we had not stood. And then here's the better part. We get to see a side of God that we would have never seen if we had not stood. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego got to see the Son of God before Mary had him in the manger. Isn't that amazing? Listen, I was raised in church since I was a little boy. I'd heard all this stuff about how God comes through for his people when they're in trouble. But even I have seen a side of God that I have never seen before, that I would have never seen had I not stood. I think it's 2 Chronicles 16:9 says this, God searches over the whole earth looking for a heart that is fully his so that he may strongly show his support on their behalf.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters. This has been part one of a 2-part keynote address given by former Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran at NC Family's annual Winston-Salem dinner on November 7th, 2019. Be sure to tune in next week for part two. To listen online and to learn more about NC Family's work to inform, encourage, and inspire families across North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org. That's ncfamily.org. Thanks for listening, and may God bless you and your family.